Hey, this is Ash with Horror Fix, and I'm here with Melissa Hannon. We're talking about the Women in Horror Film Festival, as well as the voice of women in horror. How are you doing today, Melissa?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
It's good that we finally get some of the audio snafus out of the way, because it only happens a good 43 seconds before I actually try to record anything.
Of course. That's how it always is.
That's my window. I've got 43 seconds till all this shit hits the proverbial fan. And and sometimes literal, because it actually sounds like someone is shitting on a fan when I start up Skype and try to do an interview with anyone. So it's just absolutely ridiculous. So tell us, Star, just about sort of what you do in the horror community and what got you into it. I know this is such a broad, very open question, but maybe the Reader's Digest version of sort of what got you into to horror as an actual voice in horror and not just a fan. And we can go from there.
Sure. A couple of years ago, I was just a fan, and I knew a couple of people who ran websites that reviewed films. And one of the owners told me, I really want you to write for me. Just try to write. And I said, no, this isn't my thing. I don't write. But I went ahead and tried it, and I loved it. I loved reviewing films. And so from there, I went on to two other sites where I wrote the news and things like that. I did interviews, and I just kind of had a lot of doors open for me once I started writing. And from there, once I started writing for three different horror sites, I really wanted something that incorporated other passions that I have, which are geek culture. I'm a total geek, and then gaming as well. So I couldn't really find a site that could cater to all three of those without just being a huge entertainment website. So I just decided to start my own. So back in May of 2016, I launched horrorgeeklife.com, and we encompass geek culture, gaming, and the horror genre. I'm also part of Eli Roth's Crypt TV family. There's about 200 people within that family, and they're just people from the industry, people who love the genre and who go out and represent at conventions and online and in communities and things like that. So it's been really great to do that. I run one of the largest, help run one of the largest groups on Facebook dedicated to horror. And so I've kind of just dove in here, and here I am. So
it definitely is like an all or nothing genre. It's a go big or go home scenario, it seems. The people who are into it are into it to such a degree that it's a huge part of their life. And it seems as though it's just that all or nothing, you know, it's all encompassing.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. Once you really get going, you find that the community is so open to other people who love it. And so you start finding, you know, all these indie filmmakers that want to talk to you about their film, and actors who want to talk to you about their projects, and fans who want to talk to you about what they love. And you just kind of get surrounded by it. And it's such a great community to be surrounded by, really.
One of the best things, and the thing that seems to be so validating, especially like when you run a website, for instance, and you have these actors that you really enjoy, their work. And sometimes you're so busy sort of doing the thing that you don't realize the visibility that you get or the audience that you hit. And then you get that email from the actor. Hey, I've got this going on.
Yeah.
And you're like, you wouldn't believe you just emailed me. You know, of course, not innocent people just don't give a shit. And they're like, great.
Yeah, we've had a few of those moments. And, you know, and it's just, I have a group for all of my writers. We have 24 writers on my site. And we have a group where we kind of share everything that we're doing, but then also those really awesome shout outs and not even really horror related, but James Gunn shared one of our articles on Facebook about Guardians of the Galaxy and Marvel in general. And I mean, it was just amazing to see some of these filmmakers pop up and just recognize that you're doing their stuff. It's pretty amazing. Yeah, you're right.
So what I wanted to talk about specifically was sort of about the evolution of horror and the evolution of sort of the masculine feminine dynamics in horror. Now, this gives you an idea of just how horribly fucking old I am, by the way. So I was sitting around today, and I was thinking, okay, I've got to do a lead in for this question. You know, I'll just break down the fourth wall for a second and be like, okay, I've got to do a lead in to this question today. How do I do it so that I don't seem like it's so deliberate? And I'm like, okay, well, let's talk about conventions. Let's talk about when I first started going to conventions. And then I had that epiphany of like, holy shit, I am so fucking old. Like I was, like my lead was going to be, you know, I remember when I started going back to conventions when I was in high school. And I was trying to remember like the first like real convention that I went to, you know, the first like big one where you see some of those celebrities that you idolized and you were in this enormous vendor room, this dealer room where you had everything that you couldn't buy because you were fucking 15 years old. And, you know, and I was going to start it with, you know, I remember in like 1990 and I'm like, holy God, I've been doing this since 1990. Jesus Christ, I can't lead in with that.
Oh, man.
I started going to conventions 27 years ago? That's older than half the people I interview. Jesus. So,
I mean, I really didn't even, I've never thought about horror conventions being around in 1990 because they're so big now, but they weren't even 15 years ago. So that's pretty cool.
It was a huge thing for this to happen. I mean, so I grew up in the Midwest. And then I ended up moving to New York, and I was in the New York area for about 12 years. But initially, I grew up in this just shit sandwich of a town. It was so small. So we've got like 450 people in this town. If you have any interest other than farm implements or bestiality, you're just out of the crowd, right? You're just, forget it. So I was this kid who was always trying to like make, you know, special effects out of derma wax and stage blood. So everybody instantly thought I was a Satanist because that's just what you get in a small town in the Midwest.
Right. Yes.
You know, in the 80s, when you have a difference of opinion. So I remember the Fangoria Weekend of Horrors was coming to Chicago, which was the nearest place to us. There was no way I was ever going to get out to LA when I was like 15. So it was this beacon. You know, there was actually a convention where I could meet other people who were just as cynical as I was about the world, but loved horror films. And, you know, at 15, it was just constantly begging my folks, like, listen, if you're going to do one thing for me, in hindsight, I should have not told them if they're going to do one thing for me in my life, I was going to have a horror convention. I should have said, pay for my fucking college.
Hindsight.
But instead, I shot for a bar that was so low that it was just take me to a horror convention when I'm 15. And then you can do your traditional hands-off parenting method until I'm in my 40s. So, yeah, horribly, I chose a horror convention over a conventional upbringing. And look what I got. Now I've got student loans until I'm probably five generations ahead of me.
Right.
So, you know, I remember going to this and it being this huge thing. But, you know, back then, we still luckily had a lot of the 80s were still in full swing. You know, the 90s hadn't sort of hit that degenerative phase of horror when, you know, the mainstream really tried to latch onto it. And they were more worried about, you know, what's our box office weekend going to be? How much are we pouring into this? Can we secure franchise rights? And it was still that sort of celebration of 80s horror. But that celebration of 80s horror was a very, like, masculine voice. I mean, we had some, you know, good female directors, some people in the industry, but females largely in the horror genre then were what we would consider scream queens. You know, they were more in front of the camera and the obvious, you know, objectification, which nobody really cared about in the 80s. Well, I mean, sure, people cared about it, but it wasn't talked about as much. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing this evolution where we're seeing not just more very strong female voices and feminine voices in horror, but we're seeing the fact that they're owning horror like non-apologetically, and they're doing it in such a sense that you almost feel like that voice is even sort of singing a little louder than some of the more masculine voices in horror. So what is your take on that?
Yeah, I actually completely agree that it was kind of so male dominated. I mean, not even that long ago, if you really think about it, that it just kind of felt like it was more of a guy's thing. And that, you know, if you were a female in the industry, that you kind of had a specific role that you needed to play. Even though we have like some stronger women here and there. I mean, you know, if you look at the first Friday the 13th, I mean, that was shocking because it was a woman that was doing all of the killing and not, you know, Jason.
Right.
And so, but, you know, you just kind of had a specific role. You had the role of Final Girl if you were in the films. And other than that, we did have some female directors like Mary Lambert with Pet Sematary.
Right.
But it just wasn't as dominant. And so now you're kind of seeing that reverse where women are saying, we love blood, we love gore, we love, you know, we love this. We're not, you know, hiding behind our pillows. Like we're going, hey, we love horror, and here we are. And so it's kind of cool. And to be a female who runs a site that's dedicated to horror, I'm seeing that more and more now, that there are other females that are running these amazing sites. And so, but yeah, it was definitely a lot more male dominated, and you're seeing that switch, and you're seeing the final girls not just survive, you're seeing them thrive. You're seeing them, you know, you're seeing them kind of getting, I guess, amplified a little bit in how they end up surviving the films that they're in. And so it, and we've seen so many films come across from women directors, and it's been pretty amazing, really.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me because it seems like the films themselves, they sort of got the idea of the persistence of the female spirit more than the people that were making them. It's strange because it was almost like a meta kind of thing. We watched these films, and even as, you know, a male at the time where it was very, very male dominated, we were watching it, and we knew, like, these idiot guys who are running around with their dicks in their hands were not going to survive. Like, we just knew it. It's right. Like, we got, you know, I sort of try to coin this term cockmonger. Like, these guys who were just led by their genitals throughout the entire running time of the film. Like, we know they're not going to make it. You've got a strong female character. And as soon as you see the strong female character, you'd know, okay, that's going to be more of a persistent personality. Like, this is probably going to be our final girl. This is going to be our survivor. So even the films back then was like, no, guys. More than likely, in this scenario, you're just fodder. Like, the girls, the girls will survive. You'll just be sitting somewhere with your pants down around your ankles with a goofy smile on your face with a machete through your skull. That's how it's going to end.
Only the good girls, though. The good girls survive. Usually the naughty ones, not so much. But the good girls do.
I think that there's going to be a fantastic switch in that, because there just aren't many good girls left in this world. There aren't many good guys, so we have to acclimate to the times.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it kind of, I mean, I'm sure you've seen Leslie Vernon and Behind the Mask, Leslie Vernon, and that's what that kind of reminds me of, is that, you know, you're watching and you think that one character is going to be the final girl, but then she's like getting naked and having sex and doing drugs, and we're like, wait, she's going to die. There's no way. And then it all switches, you know. But, I mean, as soon as you see her boobs, you think, nope, she's not final.
Yeah.
Like, we know she's not final girl now.
Right. It's like the, you know, the acid Kool-Aid test, only with boobs. It's like, as soon as you see that, you realize, okay, your percentage of survival, your mortality rate just dropped. It dropped horribly.
Yes.
You show the boobs. Yes. And I think with the male characters, it's also insisting to get someone upstairs. As soon as the male character insists someone comes upstairs with them, you also know that they're off the list. You can check them off.
Right. Right. Yeah, you know, I would love to see kind of final girls who are a little bit more edgy, and, you know, hey, I mean, to see like a final girl's boobs, that would be amazing. I mean, on so many levels, I would love to see like that switch in final girl.
Well, I think it would just be a sort of, you know, a token of appreciation for fandom. It's like, here you go. Now you finally get to see the final girl's boobs. Like, this is what we've all been waiting for. This is our moment to say thank you. And then we get to see the final girl's boobs. Interestingly,
I mean, has there ever been a film like that? I can't recall.
You know, I'm sure we've probably had one. It had to have been unconventional.
Yeah.
You know, the paint by numbers is always that you're never going to see the boobs. We can see panties. So we can see lingerie.
Yes.
But even the lingerie scenes have to be voyeuristic. We have to be looking through the window.
And they're more wholesome. They're going to be white or beige. You're never going to see red.
They're
going to
be frilly.
Or black.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's going to be a mix of Victoria's Secret and like just a 17-year-old's closet. It's like, it's somewhere in between where it's still sexy, but not too sexy.
Exactly.
We can't go that route. Now, interestingly enough, like, and this is a total tangent, but I have to call out like my mother for being like ridiculously just like silly and goofy. So my mother and I talk about horror films all the time. Like, she loves horror films. She got me into horror films when I was a young kid. And it was sort of this ritual of staying up late and watching horror films with her. Now, she will call out just the same as guys will call out. For instance, we were talking about final girls and their boobs. My mother's a tendency to let me know whenever there is male genitalia on TV. It's the weirdest thing. So we'll be, my family will be over like at my mother's house. And that's when my mom decides to put on Game of Thrones. And I'm like, first of all, for God's sakes, my kids are 15, 13, and 4. It's like, can I just wait a year before I subject them to Game of Thrones, please?
A year, yeah.
at least 16, at least. You know, then they can have some own sexual regrets of their own, and they can talk about, you know, well, I don't want to hear them talk about anything, but then they can go back to their friends and be like, you know, there's a lot of cock in Game of Thrones. And I'd be like, yeah, they're probably having that conversation, and it's okay. However, like, my mother is fascinated with the idea of male genitalia, like, on screen. And she will always pause it. And this is, it's not just recognizing that there's, like, an enormous cock on the screen. But when you have a 70-inch television, it's enormous cock on the screen. And it's constantly, like, you got to come in here. And I'm like, actually, I don't. I don't have to come in there.
God.
It's like, you see me like 3 or 4 times a year. Let's not make this about cocks. Let's make this about Thanksgiving and turkey and cranberry sauce and mashed potatoes. Can we have one Thanksgiving where there is not a giant cock paused on the screen? So I guess that dynamic exists for everyone where it's like, fantastic, we see boobs. And now we know that thanks to my mother, I wish it was somebody else's mother, but thanks to my mother, we can say the same for Game of Thrones and these films and series now that I guess understand that we can show as much male frontal nudity as we can female nudity.
Right.
It's like, I swear to God, they're just calling my mother. Like, they're just calling her and saying, listen, we've got an average of, we have a 5 cock quota for this issue of this episode of Game of Thrones. What do you think? And it's just about raising the ante. It's about upping the ante so that my mother is satisfied that we have equality and full frontal nudity between males and females. It's absolutely ridiculous. I'm sure she's going to listen to this too and be like, I still don't think there's enough cocks. I'm like, I know, Mom, I know.
I mean, I kind of want to hang out with her. I'm not going to lie. I would love to watch TV with her. I would love it.
Well, the great thing is that, you know, if you can't get enough of Game of Thrones, each episode ends up lasting about 2.5 hours because of all the pausing on giant cocks. It's like, I thought this was 53 minutes. We've been watching it for 4.5 hours.
Fantastic. And, you know, I have noticed too that we are seeing more guys. And I mean, of course, I'm like, I mean, for multiple reasons, but I'm like, yeah, it's fantastic. And it's equal love. And why not? I mean, really, why not? So.
As long as they just show average male genitalia, I just don't want to walk in the room and instantly just cower into a little ball on the floor. Like, I am horribly inadequate. It's like,
so it needs to just stay in the average range and we're good.
Right. They need to sort of hire actors based on, like, are you pretty average? Are you pretty average in the cock department? And, you know, hopefully they're extremely honest and they're like, you know, I do well, but I could do better. And then, you know, they sort of give them jobs based on that. But just for my benefit, just not come in the room and go, Jesus, am I Irish?
this
film festival.
This whole thing is just going to be me laughing. That's it. It's just going to be me laughing.
Well, this will just be called the cock-centric episode.
Hey, that works.
What'll be horrible is when other people mention how many other cock-related episodes we've had. And then they'll be like, no, this was not the cock-centric episode. Because it seems every episode ends up talking about cocks. And I'm like, well, they're everywhere. I mean, in all honesty, they're everywhere. It's like not talking about a restaurant or something. You got to eat sometime. So
I was not aware that that's the common theme in your show. But now I am. I will be better prepared next time, too, to talk about it. I'll have references, experiences. We'll go over everything.
I just want to see, like, your liner notes. I just want to see the little notations you made in the margins of your paper and preparing for the show.
Right.
Yeah. HBO last night, Westworld, Game of Thrones, 7 cocks, 8 cock average on Tuesday night's primetime.
You can start taking tallies of everything.
As long as we get a pie chart on here, we're totally, totally cool.
There you go.
So we've got this, now that I can get off the subject of cocks, we've got this film festival, and I want you to give me some dates so that people know what they're looking for. Because now, is it open? Like, can people purchase tickets? Can people go?
Yes. Yeah. So the Women in Horror Film Festival, it is going to take place in Atlanta this fall. And so what it is, it's celebrating women in horror, obviously. And so they're accepting films from female horror, I can't even talk, from female filmmakers. And so if you're a film maker, you're a female, you can definitely submit that to them, and they are still accepting. And I will be a judge at that this fall. And so with the official dates, I know it's this fall, but I don't think that we have official date yet.
Now, what are we looking at as far as film entries? I know that there was sort of a call out to female filmmakers. What are they looking for if there's a female filmmaker that's listening to this, if they can get past 20 minutes of talk about giant cocks and they actually get to the crew of what the show is actually supposed to be about? What would they do as far as looking at their work, seeing if it's something that might be accepted? Who do they get a hold of? Like, what is that process?
And actually, let me correct that real quick, because so I was thinking about maybe they did actually just release the date. So it's going to be September 21st to 24th in
Okay,
Georgia, right
great.
outside of Georgia. But yeah, so if they want to submit, they can go to WIHFF.com, and it tells them on there how to submit their films and what they can do to get that in. And so what we're doing right now is we're just already viewing the films. This is my first time judging in a film festival. It has been pretty cool to already see these films, and they are quality. They are really high quality. I have been blown away by the submissions that we've had, and I didn't know what to expect, but I mean, it just proves that women can really, really kick some ass in this genre. So I'm pretty excited to see, once we get to the film festival in September, what makes it, what wins awards, all of that. But yeah, so they can go to WIHFF.com, and they can submit it there.
Now, I always have to ask this because not only am I really just looking for people's opinions on what they've seen and what they haven't, but I'm also looking for something that I haven't seen so that I can try to find it and watch it. What's something you've seen lately that has just been a standout film for you? And it could be mainstream, indie, preferably horror, but if it's something that doesn't fall in that category, I'm fine with it too. Just something that really stood out that was just sort of original or just that they got it right. It can be a tried and true concept, but that they got it right.
Sure. So I'll kind of throw out a couple here. So I'll start with indie that isn't so mainstream, and I have to say Volumes of Blood Horror Stories. It is the sequel to 2005's Volumes of Blood, and of course that was critics loved it, and that did really well. It is just now getting into distribution, so you can now pick that up. I think it's on Amazon. Ibleedhorror.com. It's at Walmart, and so it's now finally out there so that you can see the 2005 film. And then, so this is the sequel though that came out last year, and it is not out for distribution yet. It is still making the festival rounds this year, but I loved it. The gore was amazing, and actually, what was really cool that ties into this show is that the special effects artist, her name is Cassandra Baker, and she did the most amazing kills. There was even a head stomp. I just cringed. Like I was gritting my teeth, cringing at this head stomp. It was so realistic and so good, and she did it. And I am so amazed. So I did an interview with her recently for Women in Horror Month, and so she talks about her process and how she did this, but and she's really looking to get into the genre, and I hope she does because she's amazing. So that's definitely the indie film that I loved. More of a mainstream horror film is the interview of I'm sorry, the Autopsy of Jane Doe. I absolutely loved it. Made my top three of 2016. So I definitely love that one. Have you seen that one yet?
Yeah, luckily we've seen both of them.
Yeah.
PJ Starks and I talk quite frequently, and I helped him with a couple screenings for the first film. We did a couple screenings here in Illinois, and then with Volumes of Blood Horror Stories, you know, we wanted to get a hold of it quickly and give a review, and we really, really dug it.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. You know, we don't get a lot of films that are sort of self-referential, you know, that are in the genre, talk about the genre, are able to poke fun of it, but still pay homage to it. And right. I think he did all of those things with a really nice balance. And you don't find that often anymore. And it
I would agree.
It felt like a love letter. I love horror films that are a love letter to horror. You know, we find a lot of horror films that do really well, but we sort of understand that they're just a launch pad or a platform for somebody's career. And then once that film does really well, they're on to bigger and better things, and we don't see them come back to horror that often. So it always seems to be this thing that launches careers, but we sort of see a lack of the love for it after a while. And with something like Horror Stories, I think we saw just the opposite. We saw someone who's – we saw a lot of people who came together for a genre that they love, and they put together something that was really a love letter to it. So we really, really dug it here. And Autopsy Jane Doe I thought was great too. So two films that were vastly different but really represented, I think, the sort of the best of the year in this side of the spectrum and this side of the spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. And we just last week we interviewed the director of Autopsy, who also did Troll Hunter, which was one of my favorite films of 2011. Even though it was fantasy, I absolutely loved it. It was so beautiful. And so we were excited to talk to him kind of about it and about his, I mean, he's such a great filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And so he gave us a lot of insight into that film.
Now, what are you looking forward to? What's sort of on your radar that's something that you're really excited about right now?
As far as film?
Yeah.
Or, you know, there are a couple of indie films that I kind of have my eye on right now. There is there's one Kickstarter that I actually just backed, which is really, it's not really rare, but for me to back something on Kickstarter, I have to absolutely love the look of. Mm-hmm. And, what I just backed was Never Hike Alone, which is a Friday the 13th fan film. I am not always into fan films because I think that they can be done a bit cheap. And whenever I watched the trailer of this, I was blown away. The quality is just so high. I am so excited. And it was terrifying. It was actually, because, you know, Friday the 13th are just very cheesy films and they're a lot of fun. And they scared us as kids, but now they're like, you know, they're just fun. Where this is taking Jason, and it's brutal, and it just looks amazing. So that's one thing that I just backed that I'm really excited about. It's 80% done now, and I'm hoping that they get everything they need to, you know, to get this thing going. The other thing, which isn't a film, but I have to say, is the Friday 13th game, which I mean, I've covered a lot of. I know the guys making it. They're great guys. I've had a chance to hang out with them a few times now and interview them, and they're just such great guys. And I'm really, really excited about how this goes. I played a lot of the beta. I was addicted to the beta when it was out. And so I'm pretty excited about that.
Well, you're following on the heels of our interview with the director of Never Hike Alone. So
I did not know.
Those are the shoes that you have to fill, by the way.
How awesome.
No pressure.
Is he into Dick also?
No pressure. Strangely enough, we did not get into the subject of my mother watching Enormous Cocks on Game of Thrones.
Man.
That was a tangent that we didn't get into. We skirted right by that and necrophilia.
Got it.
I think we went right to German snuff movies.
I mean, that trailer is just so awesome. So I'm excited.
Well, there's so much that they got right just from the trailer. I'm really, really excited to see the entire short. Mm-hmm. So now, as far as your site, what's the URL? Where can people go?
Sure.
And where can they go just to learn a little bit more about you? I mean, what's the group on Facebook? Like, how can we sort of get to what you're doing right now?
How can you stalk me? I'll tell you.
How can people stalk you?
So it is. Yeah. It is horrorgeeklife.com. And on Facebook, it's / Horror Geek Life. And on Twitter, it's at Horror Geek Life. So it's all across the board. And then for myself, from when I was writing freelance, I still have a page up and it's at Horror Geek Mel. And then also my Twitter is Horror Geek Mel as well. And then if you're on Facebook and you're interested in joining our group, it's called... it's called True Horror Fans, and we have about 54,000 members right now. It's a really great community, so so definitely join that. There's also a smaller one that I'm affiliated with that's called Horror Flix, with FLIX, Horror Flix, Montana. That's a really, it's a much smaller group, but it's a lot of fun as well. So,
well, I want to thank you for coming on with this. I'm encouraging everyone, definitely take a look at the website, especially female filmmakers. Take a look, see who's out there, what's out there. See the fact that right now the industry is headed in a fantastic direction. We've got a lot of really strong female voices in the industry, and I don't think that that's going to go away anytime soon. And definitely urge people to go to your site. And thanks again. I had a great time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.